Colossians chapter 3. We're going to be looking at the subject of love tonight. Colossians chapter 3, and I've entitled my message, Why is Love So Difficult? You know, many people think that love is an uncontrollable feeling that comes from, you know, just mysteriously appears. I felt this loving feeling. Or they speak of falling in love or falling out of love. To them, that love is something that you do, and it is something that just happens to you. The circumstances are right. You just happen to feel in love. And it's a tingly feeling that you have when you're around that person that's special. All these are kind of ideas of our world when it comes to love. You have young people that think that they're in love with their girlfriend, and they feel tingles every time they're near her, and things of that nature. In Colossians chapter 3 and verse 19, we read there, "Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them." You know, here God commands husbands to love their wives. Now, this indicates to us that he has an option. Anytime there's a command involved, you have a choice. You can obey it or you disobey it. So it is an option. It's something we have a choice of. So love is a choice. At least the biblical love we're speaking of here. You know, they can either submit to God and obey it, or they can disobey God. If you dig into the topic of love, you'll find that there are four different Greek words that deal with this subject of love. And they all cover a slightly different aspect of love. The first is filial, and filial love is a friendship love. It's the love that you would have for a person you really admire, or you're close to, or it's your companion. It was this filial love that the people that saw Jesus when he was standing outside of Lazarus' tomb, when Lazarus was dead and Jesus wept, John 11:35, the very next verse says that, oh, how he loved him, filial, a friendship love that Jesus had for Lazarus. The second kind of love is storgos. Sometimes the noun is the storge, or the verb is storge. Storgos is the noun. This is a love for offspring or family. This is a familiar love. It's a love that we have for our family members. And Paul uses the negative of this word as he was describing things that would be in the last days. In 2 Timothy chapter 3, he said that in the last days, men would be without natural affection, storgos, without that natural affection, the normal thing, not even the real, I mean, the love we should have for our families, people don't have anymore. The love mothers ought to have for their children, they don't have anymore. So they abort them and things of that nature. So there's a lack of that natural love, storgos love. The third kind of love is eros, and eros describes a romantic or sexual love. While the word's not actually found in the Bible, it describes what the Bible depicts for us in 1 Corinthians chapter 7, verses 3 to 5, where it talks about the marriage love between a husband and a wife and how they're to care for each other and to love each other. Society's popular love would be this eros love. It's more of a romantic, sexual type of a love. Typical what the world would think of as love. The fourth kind of love, of course, is agape love. And sadly, many Christians, and maybe even you tonight, could not give a good biblical definition of love. And I'm going to give you one. I've given it to you many times before, and I challenge you to memorize it. We need to understand what biblical love is. Biblical love is the sacrificial giving of yourself to meet the needs of another, expecting nothing in return. Let me say it again. It's a sacrificial, it's going to cost you something, giving of yourself to meet the needs of another, expecting nothing in return. It is a love that chooses to put others ahead of ourself. If you've not memorized it, I strongly encourage you to do that because it'll help you. We need to know what, when God says we're to love our wives, we need to know what he's talking about. We're not talking about, you know, he wasn't talking about the friendship love, although we ought to be good friends with our spouse. He wasn't talking about the family love, the storgos love, although there ought to be that between a husband and a wife. He wasn't even talking about the eros love, where that is very vital and important to a healthy relationship. But he wasn't talking about that. He was talking about the agape love here, as he deals with this here in Colossians 3, verse 19. And agape love is a giving love. It is a giving love, and it's costly, and it's difficult. Since agape love is the duty of a husband, we ask ourselves an important question. Why is it so difficult? Why is it difficult to love in a giving way to our wife? Well, many of the same reasons that we saw last week when we looked at the wife's submission to the husband apply to this, but we're going to look at them from a different angle, but the same basic outline, but looking at a lot of different applications in a lot of different ways. The first reason that it is difficult is because we inherited a sin's curse. We inherited that curse from way back in the beginning. And Adam and Eve, when they sinned, Adam brought sin into the world. Genesis chapter 3, verses 16 to 19 there. He brought sin into the world. And because of sin, he lost his natural submissive wife. I mean, you think about that. Eve was a perfectly submissive wife until they sinned. And he lost that perfect wife. Made it more difficult to love her. He now possessed a desire to rule over her that he didn't have before, making it more difficult to love her in a proper way, instead of just quashing her when she didn't like what she did. Not only that, but providing for the family now takes a lot of time and hard work, and as a result of Adam eating of the careless disobedience from the hand of Eve, he now struggles with the labor in the field to be able to eat of the herbs of the field. So a lot in that passage you can just meditate on. They were eating the fruits in the garden. Now he's eating the herbs of the field. Were they not able to eat the fruits anymore? Well, I think they probably did. But there could have been, and I'm not saying for sure, but there could have been special fruits in that garden that just went extinct, that they no longer could eat. Now they're eating the herbs of the garden. I don't know, but all I know is that before it was easy to get their food. It was there for him. Now he's got to sweat for it. Now he's got to work for it. Now he's got to work all day long. And you know, every man, when you're married, you have a responsibility to care for your family. So that involves working to be able to provide so that you can minister to your family and provide for their needs. And that also is a hindrance to our desire to give to our wife like we ought to in this loving manner, because we're tired. Adam passed this curse onto the rest of us, men, all people. We read there in Romans chapter 5 and verse 12, wherefore as by one man sin entered into the world, and death by sin, so death passed upon all men, for that all have sinned. So we all inherited his sin nature. And every husband has then that inherited curse from Adam. And your wife is not going to be naturally submissive. Doesn't mean she won't be a submissive wife, but she's got to work at that because it doesn't come naturally for her anymore. She may not show you the respect that you desire to have. And you have also a natural tendency to be harsh in your ruling over her, not treating her as kindly and gently as you should. When I say you, I'm including me in that too. All right, I'm one of you guys. All right. And harsh rule is not a quality of a godly leader. If we're leading in a harsh way, that's not the quality of a godly leader. God wants us to lead gently. And as a result of our harshness, what happens is it makes her less respectful. And that leads to bitterness. Because we're upset with what she did or didn't do, and it leads to bitterness. I'm listening to an audio book right now that is dealing with this very topic, and the author was giving some illustrations, and he illustrated about how, you know, the husband went up, he had a long day at work, he's tired, he gets ready to go to bed, he's brushing his teeth, he grabs a toothpaste and it's squashed in the middle like his wife always does, and he likes it rolled up neatly from the end, you know. And so he's furious, he squashed it in the middle again. And he goes on and rants and raves and thinks, I'm going to get even with her and I'll find ways. And he's welling up in bitterness over a tube of toothpaste. You know, he could have just bought two tubes and let her have her own tube of toothpaste and squeeze it wherever she wants. But this caused friction. And you know, a lot of times in our lives, the things that cause friction and cause bitterness to well up in us because we sit there and let it brew are little things. You know, it's just like a little sliver. You get a little tiny sliver in your hand, and at first you might not even know it's there. And then you say, oh, that kind of hurts. What's that? Oh, wow, it's all red. Wow, what happened there? Oh, yeah, there's a little sliver down there. What do you know? And if you don't take that out of there, what's going to happen? It's going to fester in, it's going to get infection in, and it's going to hurt more and more and more until you have to get in there and dig it out. But it's just something little. But you know, that's the same way it is with bitterness. Bitterness starts with little stuff. And he says, we are to love our wives and be not bitter against her. Emerson Egrich's gives an illustration of the crazy cycle. And I've shared some of this with you before, but let me just draw it on here for you again. All right, so you've got this circle here. And make sure I get it the right way. Let me put it up here. Take a look at this. All right, so he starts out here without love. And so if there's not love there, then she reacts. And when she reacts, then she has without respect. And when she doesn't show respect, then he reacts without love. And it just goes in a cycle. All right, so when he reacts without love, she reacts without respect and just keeps going around and around and around and around. It gets worse and worse until somebody gives in and says, I'm sorry. All right, sorry for my lousy drawing, but it gives you the idea. All right, and it's important for us to remember that. That is really what takes place. It's that cycle that goes on if we don't deal with things properly. And you too must spend long hours in labor and work. You know, when you go off to work and to provide your family, it's tiring. You get home, you're weary and tired. And, you know, stress will cause us not to be as loving as we ought to be. And we need to remember what God's definition of love is. Love is giving of ourself to meet the needs of our wife, expecting nothing in return. That's God's definition of what we're supposed to do. But we struggle with that because we have a sin-cursed nature. We also find that we may have an unstable foundation. We looked at the foundation last week there in Colossians 3, and I'm not going to go into it in detail, but let me just go through it briefly. We saw in verse 1, remember, he starts out there, if ye then be risen with Christ, there has to be salvation. If you don't know Christ your Savior, you're going to have a hard time loving your wife God's way without bitterness. It's going to be difficult. That's at the very foundation. And then he goes on and he says that we need to seek those things which are above and set our affection on things above, not on things of the earth. So there needs to be a focus on eternity. And he talks in verses 8 to 10 about putting off, or actually verse 5, he says that we're to mortify the sins of the flesh, Kill those things. Don't let those things involved in your heart. You know, you stop and think about this. Fellas, this is an important thing for us to think on. Not only, remember Jesus said, if we have immoral thoughts in our mind, we have committed it already in our heart. And here he says, mortify therefore in your members that are upon the earth. Fornication, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil concupiscence, covetousness, which is idolatry. All these are sexual sins. He says we need to kill those. Down to verses 8 to 10, he says we need to put off the anger and wrath and malice and blasphemy and evil communications and lying and to put all these things off. And then he tells us we're to put on, there in verses 12 and 13, we're to put on mercy and kindness and humbleness of mind and meekness and long-suffering and you know, all of these things that we're to put on instead of the things that we are to put off. There needs to be a change in our heart. What is he doing? He's laying a foundation for us to see this is what we need if we're going to love God's way without bitterness. We need to put off the bad things and we need to put on the right things. And then he goes on to a big step and he says that we need to let the word of Christ dwell in us richly, verse 16, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord. There needs to be a quality time in the scriptures every day. Now, the truth of the matter is, for all of us, but I'm talking to this men tonight. If you are not spending quality time in the Bible every day, you will not be able to love your wife like you ought to. You've got to have that quality time with God. That's essential. Because it helps us to be able to see our wrongs and clean up our hearts and stay right with God. Because we need God's help to do it right. And if we're not walking with God, we're not going to have God's help like we need to. We've got to be walking with God. And making excuses and saying, well, I'm too busy to read my Bible, or I'm too busy. You know, we're not just talking about reading three verses and saying, you know, I'm a good little boy, I read my three verses today. I'm talking about studying the Bible and learning. Read until you've gained something that you can apply to your heart. Write something down that can benefit you. Feed your soul. We've got to do that, guys. We've got to. Because not only does, when God tells us to love our wives, when you get over into Ephesians, and we're not even dealing with that much tonight, you get into Ephesians, he tells us to love our wives, and then we're to build her up and edify her, and in order to do that, you got to have something in your heart to be able to feed with her. You got to be able to share something with her, and if your heart's not growing and glowing and drawing close to God, you're not going to have anything to feed to your wife with. Without this foundation, we're going to struggle. Last week, just for a little bit of emphasis in our minds, I built a little tower last week, all right? And in my little tower, and I asked the kids, you know, how many of those blocks can I pull out of that tower before it falls down? And the answer was zero. You can't pull out any without them falling down. Well, you can't even pull out two of them. If I tried pulling out two of them, all right? You can't take any of them out. They'll fall down. I mean, you could take off the top two. Yes, that's true. That's not the foundation. But it's the idea here is that all of it's important. And so we need the foundation in our walk with God. We need that foundation in order to be able to be what God wants us to be. And so as you look at your own life, you ask yourself, is there anything missing in the foundation of my walk with God? If there is, we need to work at that because we're not going to be able to do this the way God wants. Remember, God's not just saying, this command was a double command. The first half was hard. The second half was even harder. What did he say? He says, husbands, love your wives, agape, and be not bitter against them. Be not bitter against them. So the loving your wife was the hard first part, but the second part was also very difficult, and be not bitter against them. So there can't be any bitterness in our hearts. That means all those little nitpicking things, we can't let them bother us. And if we're not going to let them bother us, that means we've got to be man enough and godly enough to be able to overlook them and conquer them and deal with them so that we don't let them irritate us and bug us and bother us and cause us friction. Because what's going to happen? When that guy squeezed, or you found his toothpaste squeezed in the middle, and he let that thing bug him, what's going to happen the next time he sees his wife? He go goes on in his little book and he's telling his little story. He says, all right, I know what I'm going to do. She can't stand it when I leave the cap off of the toothpaste because, and so she gets really irritated. So I'm going to purposely leave the cap off of the toothpaste and I hope it goes real hard in the night. And then when she picks it up and squeezes it, I hope it squirts out and hits her right between the eyes. I mean, he's thinking all these kind of vindictive things in revenge. Now, that was kind of a silly illustration, but it's reality. It's those little things. If we don't deal with them, they irritate us and they bug us until we get festered up and it's just like one of those sores and all of a sudden it pops. And it causes all kinds of grief. And so that bitterness, we've got to prevent the bitterness. I've talked a lot about bitterness, but I haven't actually defined it. Bitterness is angry resentment because of perceived unjust treatment. It's angry resentment. I'm not happy because she did that. Or I think she did that. And a lot of times we are basing it on perceived motives. She did that on purpose. Well, we don't know that. We just are assuming that. She may have, may not have. But perceived unjust treatment. And unresolved conflict and unresolved irritations may cause the husband to become bitter in his heart toward his wife. Bitter resentment will make him sharp and unpleasant, cruel, stern, distasteful, and then it goes into the cycle again. His harshness makes her resentful, and as she's not responding, she's going to be more unkind to him. It's just going to go in that circle again and again and again until one of them's godly enough to break the cycle. And it ought to be the husband. Bitterness quashes the desire for sacrificial love. I mean, you guys think about it. You girls can do this too, but the guys is what we're talking about here. If you're bitter at somebody, if you're ticked at them because they just, every time they do that, you're not going to feel like treating them with sacrificial love. You're not going to feel like going out of your way to be a blessing to them. You're not going to feel like bending over backwards to be a help to them. Not a chance. You're going to avoid them. You're going to walk away. You're going to see an opportunity and say, no, I'm not doing that because I am not happy with them. We're going to avoid it. It quashes sacrificial love. And that's why he says we've got to love without bitterness. It takes work. We need God's help. There may be nothing in the Christian life more critical than us having a genuine, flourishing relationship with God to help us with this. We've got to have God's help. It's not easy. Our wives are flesh too. We saw that this morning. And she's going to respond in the wrong way sometimes. And she's going to push the wrong button sometimes. She's going to get us irritated sometimes. She's going to squeeze the toothpaste in the middle sometimes, you know. And there's going to be things that go wrong. But we've got to be man enough to say, God doesn't want me to respond in the wrong way. And I'm walking close enough to God so that I can respond in the right way. That's what we need. It's not easy. We need God's help. We need God's help. So the difficulty may be because of the fact that we have inherited a sin-cursed nature. May also be contributed by the fact that we don't have a stable foundation. But lastly, there's often internal problems that we need to deal with. And these internal problems, there's scores of them that we could look at. We're going to just look at a handful. We may have the wrong definition of love. You know, if you start feeling like love is just this eros type love where, you know, it ought to be romantic and it ought to be enjoyable and it ought to meet my needs. You know, the typical person in the world, you say, why do you love that person? Because she makes me feel so good. That's eros. That's selfish. That's not agape at all. Not even a little bit. That's a selfish love. I like them, or I love them because of what they do for me. And if we have a wrong definition of love, we're not going to be able to fulfill what God's telling us to do here. We need to understand that love is that God's speaking of here is not that friendship love. Although there's nothing wrong with that, that's good to have friendship love. We ought to be good friends. Your wife ought to be your best friend. There's no question about it. That ought to be. And there ought to be that natural love that between us. There ought to be that romantic love between us. And then, but God here has commanded us to love with agape love. That giving love. That sacrificial love that gives of myself to meet the needs of my wife. In Ephesians 5:25, the Apostle Paul tells us that we're to love our wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it. That verse is so loaded with conviction. To love like Christ loved me. When Christ gave everything, he left the glories of heaven to come to this miserable earth where he was scorned and mocked and treated wrongly and then ultimately killed on a cross purposely for my sin. He loved me. He loved me far more than I love my wife. But that's how I'm supposed to love my wife. And we must not allow bitterness to come in there. You know, giving to get, we talked about that last week. Giving to get is manipulation. I'll do this when you do that. That's manipulation. I'll treat you right when you start treating me right. That's manipulation. I'm not going to do that for you until you do this for me. That's manipulation. All that's wrong. That is not love. That is sinful. God says he wants us to love. Love is giving of ourself, expecting nothing in return. That's hard. It's hard to just give, expecting nothing. To show love and genuine kindness and generosity, not expecting anything in return. And if we get nothing in return, we don't sit back and say, she didn't even say thank you. No, that was expecting a thank you. But she didn't even treat me nicely after I did that for her. Then we're expecting something in return. That's not love. Love is doing it without expecting anything in return. Love is hard. Love is hard. It's not easy. Selfishness is one of the big things that stands in the way. We expect something for what we've done. That's our sinful nature. I deserve better than this because what I've done for you. God says, no, that's not love. Love is giving. Love is helping. Love is generous. Love is providing. Love is meeting those needs without demanding or expecting anything in return. Now, that doesn't give the wife the right to say, I don't have to give him anything because he's just supposed to love me. Well, there ought to be a response. But if there is no response, the purpose and motive behind our love cannot be based on getting. Or it's manipulation. It's selfish. Another thing that can take place is a lack of biblical confession and forgiveness. And we don't feel like loving like we ought to if we haven't confessed our wrong and forgiven properly. When we've done wrong, we need to be man enough to go to our wife and say, sweetheart, I am sorry. I was wrong. What I did was not right. I should not have acted like I did. I was wrong. And fellas, if we say, I was wrong, but we weren't sorry. And that's hard. It's so tempting to say, I was wrong, but if you wouldn't have done that, I wouldn't have done that. No, that's not being real confession. Real confession is I was wrong, period. And even if I was only 10% wrong and she was 90% wrong, my part is to admit what I did and not say, well, I was 10% wrong. No, just say I was wrong. And let God work in her heart about her part. But we've got to be willing to just confess our wrong. She's going to fail us. We're all human. We're all flesh. We fail each other. But we need to be prepared to forgive when there is a confession. If our wife says, I'm sorry, we need to be ready to forgive. And one of the best things that we need to remember always in our marriages is when you forgive, you forget it. Now, I'm not saying you don't ever remember it in your mind, but you never bring it up again. Never. You don't bring it up. Once it's forgiven, it's done. And you can't bring it up again. Because if you truly forgave, then you said, I let that go, it's forgiven, and then we need to leave it gone. Because if we dig it up again and say, well, last time you said this. No, you can't do that. Genuine forgiveness is taken care of. We don't talk about that again. Two more things here. You may not be actively seeking to edify your wife. That's part of what I mentioned earlier in Ephesians 5:25, and I don't have the time to dig into that thoroughly, but he says, husbands, love your wives, even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of the water by the word. God says here, my job is to sanctify and cleanse my wife. I am to make her a more godly, a more wholesome, a more character-filled person. That's my job. It's not easy. And that's your job, men, to do that for your wife, to build her up and make her a more godly, more wholesome, more character-filled person. It's not easy. That's why it's difficult to love. Love is not easy. It takes a lot of work. It's not easy. The last thing is that we may struggle to love like we ought to because of a lack of self-control. Fellas, we live in a filthy world. And we need to learn to bounce our eyes away from immodesty. Everywhere you go, especially this time of year, women think they can take off more than they ought to take off. And they catch your attention. And we need to bounce our eye away from it immediately instead of taking a second look. We've got to. It takes discipline. If we don't do that, we're not loving our wife like we ought to. Remember what Jesus said there in Matthew 5? If we look at pornography, you don't love your wife if you're looking at pornography. Just plain don't love your wife. Because she's supposed to be the one that you adore, not some other woman. And if you find sexual fulfillment in anything that excludes your wife, you are defrauding your wife. And that is a forbidden sin. Nothing, in no way should we find sexual fulfillment in anything outside of our wife. These things are things that will hinder us from loving like we should. We wonder, why is it so difficult to love? This is why. We have a fallen nature. We often don't have the foundation we're supposed to have. And then we have all these personal hang-ups, problems, wrong understanding of love and selfishness and unwillingness to confess and forgive. And we're not really seeking to edify our wife like we should. We're not willing to give of ourselves to meet her needs. And then we have a lack of self-control. So we need to work on these things, fellas. And it's something that all of us need to keep in mind and struggle with. There's not going to be a day that you're going to find, oh, got that all conquered now, ticked all those things off, I'm doing good. We're going to struggle with this. Do we see Jesus? It's just the way life is. But we've got to work at it. So what did God tell us in these two verses? He says, wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as it is fit in the Lord. Husbands, love your wives and be not bitter against them. Two difficult commands. Difficult for the wife to submit and difficult for the husband to love. And yet God wouldn't have commanded these things if he didn't give us the strength to do it. We can do it. Men, you can love your wife like you ought to. You can love your wife like God wants you to. It's not impossible. You can get victory and you can do right and you can think right and you can do these things that God asks you to do. It's possible with Christ. That's why I said it's absolutely vital that we have a close relationship with Christ. And if you're struggling with any of these areas, you go back to that main point. You need to be walking closer to God. Because that's where it all starts. We've got to have God's help. I can't do it, and neither can you, if we don't have God's help. But with God's help, we can.